Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's a football. It's a football.
If you don't know football, you shouldn't be with a microphone in your hands.
Hello and welcome to Soccer Sense, the sensible football podcast, where much like Manchester United's finance division, we have been freewheeling it for about the last 10 odd years now on every episode. This is Tariq joining you along with Bishal from Bangalore, who has changed his display name today to Ownership Games. Welcome, Bishal.
What's happening, guys?
So that might give you a bit of a clue as to what we might want to talk about today, particularly in context of the recent Jim Ratcliffe interview with Gary Neville. And because we need to talk a little bit of finance, who better to join us than from the financial district in London? It's Karan, our Soccer Sense finance correspondent.
So I'm a finance correspondent, I'm a European correspondent, I think I need a raise.
Yeah, it's called being still, yeah. Still being on the podcast.
I need a raise unlike a lot of Manchester United employees.
Yeah, speak to Jim Ratcliffe about it.
He most likely will give it to you.
So gentlemen, we are gathered here quickly to talk about, well, this week, quite a lot of football going on. I think most of the intrigue has been taken care of, although tonight, as we record, the Madrid derby will be happening again to figure out who from there advances to the quarterfinal of the Champions League. That ties is poised very interestingly. Beyond that, not much of interest, except for maybe what does the Arsenal-PSV scoreline end at. That's what most of the bets will be on today, the over-under of that scoreline. But, of course, we did have would not say unexpected entirely, but at the same time, probably not something that you'd expected, at least until this round of knockouts started, which is PSG knocking out Liverpool. On the anniversary of Atletico Madrid famously knocking out Liverpool in the round of 16 of the Champions League, no less, which was back in 2020 before COVID shut everything down, including Liverpool's chances of Champions League. So exactly 5 years back to that day. PSG, of course, winning the return leg 1-0, and then Donnarumma, like Karan said before he started recording, turning himself into Alisson of the first leg and putting in a stellar show, not just at the beginning of the match, but also in the penalty shootout for Liverpool to crash out.
I mean, he's no stranger 4-1. To big penalty shootouts, is he?
After all, Italian goalkeepers and penalty shootouts, that's the kind of heritage we are
in
very
England.
Aware of. We are very aware of that indeed. But that result shifts the attention to this PSG side, who look like an exciting side going into the quarterfinals. Jose Enrique doing a great job out there with them. But gentlemen, today we are here to talk about something a little different, a little tangential to that. But there is a tenuous connection because PSG is one of those clubs which, thanks to an ownership change in the late 2000s, early 2010s, have been transformed into a world-beating club, which, of course, as we are all aware, have hosted all sorts of superstars in between after that. And it, if reports are to be believed, originated from a meeting between the then French President Nicolas Sarkozy and the the Emir of Qatar, or rather the Qatar Football Federation, talking about a quid pro quo that the I think it was Michel Platini who was also part of that meeting,
Of course he was.
saying they would back Qatar's bid for the 2022 World Cup, but in turn the favor that they wanted from the Qataris was of course the sovereign fund coming in and investing in PSG because that was Sarkozy's favorite club and he wanted them to become a world-beating club. Well, good luck. We're trying to win the Champions League this
Well,
time.
they're a world club. They're a world club. World beating club is still questionable.
Depends. The French culture of France, the world, lie, so might as
So which brings us to this rather prickly issue of ownership. We have discussed it multiple times on this pod, and we have kind of looked at it through all kinds of lenses. And currently, the club that finds itself in the center of an ownership storm, I think, would be Manchester United, given the developments that have been happening there, given the turbulent times that have been happening there. Incidentally, this is a very critical week for Manchester United because the Europa League game is extremely critical. Given that they are on record saying that winning the Europa League is almost existential to their finances, because that's the difference between probably being in the Champions League, because evidently, if you are 15th in the English Premier League, they don't invite you to the Champions League. Incidentally, and they're also on record saying that last year's FA Cup win, again, thank you, Liverpool, for conceding in injury time, actually led United to being invited to the Europa Cup, Europa League in the first place, which again makes a humongous difference to finances. So we'll try and break that down in terms of ownership and balancing a club. What it stands for, and a club as a business, two things that have intertwined in this 21st century in particular. And of course, Manchester United's own success, which is, it becoming a global brand, is its, in some ways, its own worst enemy. So let's start with you, Karan, since you are the finance person. Talk us through the concept of football ownership. We've come a long way from Pink Floyd singing about it.
Well, let's start off by saying American owners and European sports clubs are not a very good match. They just aren't. But anyway, do you
American
get us?
owners and the world, not a good match.
Actually, yeah, scratch that. That's a better line. That's a better line. Okay. But that aside, I'm just going to throw out some numbers here, right? To start with, 330 million pounds is the loss that United have made over the last 4 years, right? Now, in order to basically kind of, and in addition to this, there are other, costs which they have basically incurred over time, et cetera, but basically they are currently under a period of strict austerity. Like they were saying, basically, as we were discussing the other day, this is probably the second most glamorous austerity measure since Greece in 2012, I guess it was. Anyways, so now one of the things, things are so desperate right on Manchester United that they are basically cutting something like 40,000 pounds from their former players association. Now, these are players who played for the club during the 60s and the 70s, right? So they're basically cutting that out in addition to other cuts like we saw. They're basically cutting out lunches for their employees, et cetera, right? They've at one point of time had a workforce of around 1,150 people, which of course is going to get cut down even further. Now, in the last 7 years, their operating costs, now this is costs which does not include players,
Salaries. Yeah,
player
salaries.
salaries, players acquisition, player sales, et cetera, right? All of that. It does not include any of that. That alone has increased by 100 million pounds. While the player's salary during this time has increased by 100 million pounds, their revenue has increased by during this period, this over this entire period, their revenue has basically been around about 100 million pounds as well. They've spent a total of 1 billion pounds on players since Alex Ferguson has left, right? 1 billion pounds. This is what was the 2012, 2013. So that's about a 12-year period that they spent $1 billion. Now, these are just from the club's perspective. Now, from the Glazers' point of view, while all this has happened, as part of their takeover, they have dropped a debt of £730 million on Manchester United's lap. Now, in order to service that debt, they're basically paying an interest of £35 million alone each year. And in addition to that, they actually have the gall to take out £200 million on dividends alone over the entire course of their ownership. This is equivalent to, you know, AIG board members paying out bonuses during the height of the subprime crisis. So now all this is just non-football related. Now, if we just and it's not as though, you know, they've been making great strides on the football pitch financially, because they have been taking a hammering in the transfer market as well. Now, we could go on when it comes to that, but just taking three transfers, the mini transfer, just three transfers alone. There's Anthony's transfer, which cost them £87 million, Sancho, which was around £73 million, and even all the way back to Pogba's £89 million. All of these, to some extent, the Pogba transfer, they were able to amortize that expense over the next 5 years. But Anthony and Sancho is an absolute car crash, because they're basically now on loan at other clubs where they're paying part of their salary as well. So
They're
totally
still paying part of the transfer fees as well. They're not just
part
paying
of their
for the
transfer
club.
fee as well, right? So totally, that alone has cost them around £249 billion. And there are many players like this, players like Donny, I think Van de Beek as well, who I think cost around 30, £40 million, if I remember. That is one. And
Correct.
another part that people are actually forgetting about is, since Sir Alex Ferguson has left, there hasn't been a single manager who has completed his entire contracted tenure. So when they basically fired all these managers and they don't go for free, they basically have to pay them out because they still had years left on the contract. Moyes was paid 7 million. Elvi Van Gaal was paid 8.4 million. Jose, £15 million to cancel his contract. Solskjaer, £7.5 million, and Ten Hag was paid £15.5 million. So that's a total of £52 million that they've paid just to get rid of managers. All I can say is, if Manchester United was an Italian club, by now they would be looking at the absolute abyss, because this has happened to a lot of clubs in Italy over the past. The what's basically keeping United going right now is purely the fact that they are a global brand, and the Premier League, unlike the Serie A, is genuinely a global league, wherein the TV revenue that they're actually generating is actually, you know, keeping a lot of them afloat. In fact,
So,
if you remember, at times, a club like Parma, for example, it got so desperate for them that they had to basically start selling their furniture just to pay players' salary. So that's how bad it is at United right now.
I mean, it obviously is a dire situation. Honestly, again, from a Liverpool fan's perspective, this is not necessarily new in the sense that Liverpool went through a scare during the Gillette and Hicks episode. Where again, two American businessmen almost tried to swindle the club and get ownership and pull off something similar, but thankfully that was averted back then. And much as grief, a lot of grief people give John Henry, I think if there is one thing John Henry knows, it's how to run a profitable club. With given his experience with the Red Sox and so on. But Vishal, let's bring in the footballing perspective here, that we have always talked about the fact that football clubs are a bit unique in the sense that they are a community tool as well. They obviously have an obligation towards football and the fans, and then of course they have an obligation towards commerce, and balancing the three is not always easy. But in this case, like, could it have been done in a more common sense manner?
Obviously, right? Yes. But if you go deeper, and this is where succession planning is becomes so important, right? Because the Glazers were not a post-Ferguson phenomenon. It's just that David Gill and Fergie knew how exactly to handle the situation, and therefore, you know, work around with the resources that they have. And what Sir Ratcliffe said very, very well was that, see, as much as you want to blame the Glazers, I always say this, in the end of the day, yes, they're a business. They will try to take their money out of it, right? And the part of owning a business is they also transfer their debt to the company. It just happens. But did they give too much leeway to the management team, who ran the club for the last 3, 4 years? Like you need to look at Woodward. You need to look at that set of people who really ran the club to the absolute ground, right? Because basically their deals have all fallen through, their transfers have fallen through. They have, like Karan said, over 1,100 people. Why? Like Ratcliffe is close to now down to 600, 700 people and still trimming down, right? That's how inflated their current payroll is. None of this hiring or the number of people has led to development at a club at a training level. Did you hear the part where Ratcliffe called out United still don't have a data and analytics setup?
Yes,
Like, my
absolutely.
God.
In this
So
day and age.
basically, the training ground Carrington's a mess. They have no science behind the chaos, or evidently, because look at the transfers they're making, look at the analysis that they're doing, and they're not bringing in the money because, again, because think about it, Ajax had valued Antony at about 35 to 40 million. United paid double. Sancho, everybody saw red flags. United went and paid a ton of money. Like Danny van de Beek, because Karan took the example again. Nobody knew why you bought them, like including the manager of the club saying, why did you get me a van de Beek? Like it is. Could the run club have been run better for sure? But I think the problem is the fact that they just chose people who do not know what they are doing, right? And it's going
So,
to lead to extreme measures.
currently, Vishal, let's talk about the current situation. And you had thoughts about that, about how INEOS and obviously Jim Ratcliffe is running this. Obviously, it's come down to a point on the business where, as Karan would attest, it has become a question of cash flow, and that is why he's talking about that the club going bust by Christmas and things like that, which is not exaggeration or hyperbole, because there is a difference between being illiquid and insolvent. And
Of money at the end of this year. Christmas this November this year, the club runs out of cash. Do you realise how that's sort of quite a big
but do you realise how
thing?
bad that is to hear? I know that's a fact, by the way, because over the last 2 or 3 years, I think the fans who obviously got an interest in the business side of the club have been tracking the club's desperate situation, the mismanagement over the last 10 years. This is the richest football club in the world when it comes to revenue, but because of
Top three. Top three.
top three
Three
risk.
of us up there,
Top three in the world, and it's having to cut £40,000 from ex-players, and now removing food from members of staff in the canteen. I
But the
mean,
alternative isn't very tenable, is it? Which is the club goes bust at Christmas. We don't want that.
no,
We don't
absolutely.
want
No,
that. We
we
have to
absolutely
deal with
don't
that.
want that. But we also have to, I think, make decisions in light of sort of the impact that they're going to have. Because, United, as you know, you're a fan, has a soul, it has a heart.
The challenge most of the time for most businesses is the first the liquidity runs out, and then the real problems begin. And they are trying their best to stave off that liquidity problem, because as a club, you want to keep it running, or if you want to keep it a going concern. So your thoughts, Vishal, as obviously the resident Manchester United fan here, of the moves that they're making, that while the fan side of you may not necessarily enjoy it, but you will also kind of know that these are hard moves that are needed now, because it's short-term pain versus longer-term survival that is at
Absolutely.
stake.
Because as I listened to that interview, I put fan in me aside, right? Because I needed to truly understand what the man was trying to tell us. And everything that they're doing, while it might seem very short term, it might be all of that, it is going to add up in the long term, right? Because, like he said, if United have to be profitable again, if United have to be successful again, and United have to bring in the money, the sponsorship, and everything that comes along with United at the scale of United, they need an elongated period of success, which is the next 5 to 7 year window, as far as he's seeing it. And if I'm as a United fan right now, I think that I would not have anybody else but INEOS run my club, right? Because if there's one thing, if you know about INEOS and how they conduct management, conduct sports, conduct business, is they know what they're doing, right? Ratcliffe is also shrewd enough to not keep putting money into it, and he called it out, right? The solution is not throwing money at this. They have the money. They have £1 billion to build the stadium as we talk about today. It's not about that. That's not the solution, right? That's a long-term fix to take the club to the next level. He is making some shrewd calls right now. He is basically making, like you said, liquidity is like £40,000 a month might seem like a small value to everybody. But he made valid points, like that amounts to liquidity. Lunch, like everybody might complain about it, but 95% of the country does not get free lunch. So that's a simple thing. He's like, sure, we have a ethos to the club, but we can hold on to our ethos and culture as long as you want, but you might not have a club, right? So therefore, what do you need to prioritize on is what you really need to sit back and take a call on. And I think, as a fan, I think we discussed this about a couple of months back. I think I'm completely in favor of what they're doing, how they're running the club, how they're conducting business. Are they shrewd? Yes. Are they going to sound cutthroat? Yes. But I think the situation that you have a Brit Manchester United fan owning, running the football operations, give him some breathing room, and I think he'll deliver as much as possible.
Right, because the whole tension again, Karan, it brings us back to sort of the broader financial point that, like we said earlier at the beginning, that United are kind of a victim of their own success in the finance industry or the banking industry. Karan, since you brought up the 2008 financial crisis, Manchester United have made themselves too big to fail, but they find themselves in a position where they would have to fend for themselves because there are no government bailouts coming to save a Manchester United. So how do you think they, because fundamentally it all comes down to their central product is still the football, and their pathways to revenues will open up only through that, because like you said, winning the Europa League currently is their main focus. Because they want to get into the Champions League and they do not want to miss out on European football one way or another, because it's extremely critical to the revenue, because that would be a difference of a 50 to 100 million pounds right there of in terms of TV and gate revenue and things like that. So obviously they have to work on the football, but unfortunately they're stuck. So it's a chicken and egg situation that the football is also stuck because of previous bad decisions which have accumulated and put them into an almost impossible position. So they need a bit of a miracle on that front. But like Vishal said, that miracle is being partially engineered financially because that's what it requires at the moment. So your take, Karan, on as a neutral fan,
I
where
think I agree with what Vishal was saying that, these are hard times and hard times call for hard decisions and it's not going to be popular. But at the same time, while Jim Ratcliffe can be painted in many people's eyes as a villain, we need to kind of understand that he is basically cleaning up somebody else's mess. Right? It's just a fact. He unfortunately is forced to take these hard decisions because somebody else messed up. And in fact, the situation has been so bad that you actually have to further appreciate how well a job Sir Alex Ferguson did in his last 2 to 3 years, winning those, especially the last couple of league titles. I mean, no other manager has been able to do that, right? So that just shows how much more great a job that he did, right? The other mistake, I think that, while yes, I agree that, agree with the fact it's kind of like a chicken and egg story. The one aim that every football club has, though they might not, speak about this in the open, is they always want to kind of move to a model where it's purely where their operating profits will always be higher than their footballing profits. Well, not higher, but at least the operating profits will be enough to just to sustain the club. That is the aim of every football club, right? Because the football part of it is always going to be cyclical. You're going to go through periods where you're successful. You're going to go through periods where, you're not going to be as successful. But from the back end, if you're still able to sustain yourself purely from the operating side of things, that's what every football club's aim is. But I think one of the lines that Jim Ratcliffe made during his interview, which actually stood out for me, was he said they basically bet on qualifying for the Champions League. Right now, if you remember, one big English club that made the exact same mistake all those years back was Leeds United. They made the exact same mistake where they basically
Sure.
hedged all their bets on qualifying for the Champions League. Well, of course, United situation to Leeds United is different in many ways, but at the same time, at a very basic level, this is one of the primary mistakes that even they did. Now, while right now, yes, that might seem like the best avenue through which they could kind of get an influx, a further influx of cash. In the long term, that cannot be sustainable. Even for a club as big as Manchester United, that cannot be a model in which you base your financial success on.
Yeah, so interesting story since you brought up Sir Alex's outstanding performance of being able to win those the final two Premier League titles with a squad which was, let's say less than optimal or under any other manager may not necessarily have won. So I bring back a personal story that relates to all three of us. That if you recall, we went to a Manchester United cafe to watch a very famous Manchester City Arsenal game, followed by a Man United game. A Manchester City Arsenal game in which a certain Mikel Arteta scored a goal to get Arsenal victory, and United picked up 3 points as well. And the difference, I think, at that point of time was double digit points in that 2011-12 season. And we had thought that Manchester United had this locked. And of course, we all know how that ended up. From Arteta, it went Aguero in about 6 weeks.
And it's really your fault.
The only assist that Balotelli ever had in his career.
Which, if, and another important update that within about 3 years' time, that Manchester United cafe also shut down.
I was actually going to say the same thing. I was actually thinking about that.
So to bring the point back full circle, I mean, things like a Manchester United cafe and experiences and merchandise and things like that are what you are talking about, Karan, in terms of having enough operating revenue to be able to run without it being that directly tied
Tied to
to
football.
footballing fortunes, which is exactly what, like you said, they have not been able to do over the last 10 years. It probably might require a little bit of time to undo the entire mess. In the meantime, Vishal, how do we watch Manchester United on the football field with this context in mind?
Don't watch
Bishal
No, but jokes.
is channeling his inner Amorim, because I think they asked Amorim that, oh, would like winning Europa League make it anything better for us? They say no, it's not going to, because nothing is going to make this any better.
See, because as much as you want to say the football's a mess, like Karan said, they have spent £1 billion. They still have no excuse for the players that they have gathered, the salaries that they pay. Because as much as you like to say it, blame injuries, blame whatever, the football is still terrible. The players' attitudes are still all over the place. There are some new players who are showing some sort of a fight. It's a question of whether they rub off on the rest or they get pulled into the system. But at this point in time, I don't think over the next, see, it's, you're again in a phase of transition. Amorim is going to get his first real transfer window coming up, but most of the transfer window, they're going to be paying for players that are already in the system. About 80 or 90 million is going to be paying for existing players who might, half of them are out on loan. So they're not going to make significant moves for at least 2 more years in the transfer window, right? It's going to be piecemeal. It's going to be small time fixes into players who fit into the system. So as much as possible, either develop a thick skin or don't watch them. I think
if you recall, during time, I mean, there have been times earlier as well where, financially United were probably not at their best, but they still had that safety net of having a very strong youth program. They were still able to bring players through,
Hey,
even
to their credit, they
to,
still do. They still
I
do. To
mean,
their credit, they still do.
yeah,
Excellent youth
true, but then
program.
it's not, but then fair enough, they might still have the same youth program, but they still don't have the support structure to actually get the best out of those youth players. That's the problem right now.
Yeah, which is creating again. So again, Karan, coming back to your operating revenue point, that this is again creating that situation where you don't have, let's say, an assembly line of players who you could, blood in your own team or then have them transfer out. So which could also be potential sources of revenue or at least defray some of your costs in the transfer market, which also obviously is a limitation.
So Alex Ferguson won a league title with Tom Cleverley. You believe that?
Well, which means that again, you have to kind of go back to Sir Alex Ferguson to think about it that way, that you've got limited resources and you have to try to make the best of it. So United probably take on the mindset of a club that is fighting for survival and not a club which still thinks that they are too big to fail. And that could be potentially the important mindset change that is going to happen. And particularly Indian fans, I think a lot of kids who grew up watching the invincible levels of Manchester United now have heartbreak from watching Manchester United go through a dip, and also potentially back problems from whatever I can calculate their ages to be. So life's not treating them very well.
Can confirm.
Nonetheless, we will of course be keeping a track of what happens through this the remainder of the season, and naturally the transfer window and beyond, and we'll bring you this United story as it develops, because like Vishal said, it has to be looked at through a slightly different lens than everybody just going into fits of rage every single time anything happens, which obviously does not help the cause largely. And naturally, everybody knows that a potentially stronger and vibrant Manchester United is great for the competition, the league, the game itself. But again, that is up to United, the players, the management, and of course the owners to deliver. And we shall see if sense prevails out there. In the meantime, that's all the time we have for this week. If you have any thoughts on what United should be doing, let us know. We might even address some of them in the coming episodes. In the meantime, listen to us wherever you listen. This is Tariq signing off along with Karan
See you guys.
and
You know what? Put in a prayer for United.
Vishal. As you should, and hopefully they are still a functioning club by the time we mention record the next episode.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.